All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting for December 10th, 2018. Ms. Trivancy, would you please call roll?
Mayor Dooley?
Here.
Councilmember Barker?
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Here.
Councilmember Phillips?
Here.
And Councilmember Michaels?
Here.
Great, thank you. If you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. We welcome our viewers on our live stream tonight. Those folks are watching. First item of business is the approval of the Town Council June 25th, November 26th, December 3rd, and November 15th, December 3rd Council minutes, and November 15th Committee of the Whole meeting minutes. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we approve of the Town Council's June 25th, 2018, November 26th, 2018, and December 3rd, 2018 meeting minutes, and November 15th, 2018 Committee of the Whole meeting minutes.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
Second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to approve the Town Council's June 25th, 2018, November 26th, 2018, and December 3rd, 2018 meeting minutes, and the November 15th, 2018 Committee of the Whole meeting minutes. Council discussion. Ms. Barker.
Are we all caught up now on all the council minutes, or do we still have some that are back there that we need to bring forward yet?
We're caught up until November 29th. We're still outstanding. I believe that's the last one.
Which one is
November 29th.
Okay.
But we should be caught up now from the time when we've had no clerk.
Further council discussion. Public comment. All right, hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Mr. Phillips.
Aye.
Ms. Barker.
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb.
Aye.
And Mr. Michelson.
Aye.
Great, thank you. Next up is approval of biweekly claims. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we approve of the biweekly claims.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to approve the biweekly claims. Inquiries from council. Ms. Barker.
Claim number 14837, Curtis Tools for Heroes. I know this is just department, but what are these exactly?
Say the claim number again.
14837.
That was turnout gear. One set of turnout gear and two helmets.
So the helmets are for just regular helmets? Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Further inquiries from council on the claims? Mr. Michelson.
Number 14839. Did the mayor ever get approval from the council?
He did not.
Did you think you seek approval?
I did not. It was an expenditure recommended by our insurance company and something we had to do in response to the claim. Ms. Holcomb.
Where is this coming out of?
Comes out of your legal services budget.
And do we need to do a budget amendment for this?
Not yet. We likely will before the end of the year to cover any additional legal work required by our attorney. Ms. Barker?
On claim number 14859, on the second page of it, council minutes binders 5949. The what?
12 binders.
12 binders? Why do we have 12 binders when we only have 4 sitting up here?
These are the binders we keep the minutes in on the shelf.
Yeah.
In the office.
Okay.
These are the archive binders.
Okay. And then one more. Same claim. The website builder renewals. I know that we have several of them on there. A couple of them are 122.33, the same amount. Is that correct?
It's one bill split through multiple different funds.
What? Okay. I saw the one that's sure. The two same numbers.
No. Yeah, and a lot of like the cash receiving computer is the same way where we split those out in these different funds to pay to spread the cost out. Okay. Any further inquiries from council? Ms. Barker.
I have on the expenditures, budget versus actuals. Why so much is being taken out of the parks account, the 460-430?
Okay, we'll address that during April's financial report.
Thank you.
You bet. Is there any public comment on the claims? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Ms. Holcomb.
Aye.
Mr. Michelson?
No.
Ms. Barker?
No.
And Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Okay. Mayor votes aye. Next on the agenda is administrative reports. Ms. Van Tassel.
It's speeding up the process of getting receipts posted, and it's freeing up Denise's time to keep track of those past due accounts and get some shut-off notices sent out and get those collections coming in. I did get the AFR submitted on December 4th, which is about 3 weeks ahead of, well, 3.5 weeks ahead of last year and 6 months ahead of the year before. So I feel pretty good about that we got it submitted well in advance of the due date, which is not until the 31st of this month. Unless Steve's got a question.
I do. On it's in the general on the budgets versus actual. I notice a lot of things being taken out of that department. My main concern was professional services. We're at 223% on that. So can you tell me
tonight because I don't have that information in front of me, but if you send me an email in the morning or even tonight.
Okay, because there was just a lot. I mean, there's just a lot of things coming out of that department when I know we have some things coming out, but why so much?
And that's the top of my head, but I can find it for you easily enough.
We can run a query and detail exactly what's...
Okay, easy enough to find. I just wasn't prepared.
Okay, any other questions for April? Thanks, April. Police Department. Chief.
I'm good to see you. I apologize for that. Our monthly report? Okay. So the cop with the cop held on the 29th went really good. Had an opportunity to introduce our new officer, which I will do tonight. Just a few minutes here. It was a good turnout. We did do the live broadcast on the Facebook deal. And it was nice getting comments from people and being able to speak to those that weren't present. It was a little disconcerting because it's not something I was used to, but I really liked it. It was a good thing, and so we're going to do that on a regular basis. We are moving forward with the Stevensville Crime Watch. We are ready to start putting applications out and getting those captains together. And I've had some interest various places in town from people that would like to serve in that capacity. So that's really great. I'm looking forward to getting that thing up and running and getting some good people in those positions to be able to look out for the neighborhoods and help us. If anybody wants to know more about that, I would love to sit down and talk to any of you, any members of the public that are interested in it or just have general questions about how this is going to be structured and what we're going to do generally for the community through that program. So if you're interested in doing that, just call Janelle and set up a time to meet. I'd be happy to sit down with you and fill it in. Just kind of give you an idea about conceptually how this thing is to be and what I'd like to see it look like when it's in full swing. So our statistics for November, 40 calls for the month of November. I do want to talk just briefly about the issue with theft of services and the garbage cans at the park. It seems to kind of be more prevalent, and I'm not really sure why right now. I don't know. Maybe if bitter disposal rates. I have no idea why it's happening more often. But we are seeing more household garbage placed in containers at the parks. And although in most cases we can deal with that, because oftentimes there's, you know, evidence to support who's placing the garbage in those containers, I think it would be a good idea if we would really look at something like maybe the Forest Service has, where they have the receptacles that are only open so wide, and you can, you know, generally only put in there like things that you would have from a picnic or, you know, something like that, instead of just a big bag of garbage from your kitchen garbage can type of thing, you know, to stuff in the containers. Plus, it would also help us deal with issues with animals, bears, and so forth. Especially since the burn, we're seeing more animals coming into the populated areas because the food is in shorter supply in those burned areas, so we're going to see more of an influx. I just think it would be a good idea. It's been in the back of my mind for a long time, but now I think it's becoming a situation where we have to give it some attention and really consider doing that. I can put together some prices and see what it would cost to get those garbage cans bear-proof and to also address the issue with putting household garbage in there. So I'll work at doing that, maybe get something on the agenda here down the line. Is there any questions about any of the information tonight?
Any questions for the chief?
Okay, well, I'd like to introduce our new officer. This is Kevin Oberhofer. He is a Stevensville town resident, which is great. Things are going wonderful. He's training. He's got a pretty good background, which I'll let him get into, but I'd just like to introduce him.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you. Yes, my name is Kevin Oberhofer, and it's good to be here. Appreciate all you do from the council to keep this town, you know, running like it does. And I look forward to being a part of making this town be a place where people want to live. So anything I can do to help with that, you know, just let me know, certainly. So as far as my background goes, my parents were born in Miles City. They moved to Chicago. I was born in Chicago. We always came here to see grandparents and aunts and uncles. So Missoula specifically. And I love Missoula. So graduated from University of Montana. Went to the Helena Police Department and worked there in different functions on the Helena Police Department. Gonna have to go back to Academy again. That's gonna be kind of fun. I went to Academy in 92, so, and I went to Border Patrol, worked there for a while, commercial pilot. I've done quite a few different things, worked as a defense contractor for a major missile manufacturer. I never thought I'd be a peace officer again, but I love this town. And James needed help, and it just seemed like a great fit for me. When I was a police officer, I was also a DARE officer, so I know the classroom environment, helping kids make right decisions. And so this is a great opportunity for me to do that again. So I saw the need and put my best foot forward, and here I am. So look forward to doing that for this community.
Great. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yeah, anybody have any questions for me?
Any questions for Kevin? Thanks, guys.
Don't be afraid. This is your chance. All right. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you.
All right. Next report is from Public Works Director George Thomas.
So I didn't get my report in the girls to put on the board because I was off for last week. So last month we produced 13 million gallons of water. We metered 3,918,000. Powder usage was 609,970.
So we have a water loss of $8,547,000. I had a meeting with some of the meter people why we have partly so much high water usage and loss. And part of it is our old meters, the big ones, that nothing's been done to them other than a new, what they call interpreter head put on. So over the years, they've lost their percentage of how much they meter. So in the future, we're going to start replacing those big meters and see if we can't get more of a handle, plus, you know, fix the leaks that we know of. One leak was fixed up on Peterson Place this last month, across the street from your house.
Not mine.
Not yours. The sewer treatment plant treated $6,209,000 down there. We had a fire hydrant hit up on Eastside Highway in Perry Lane. Evidently the police didn't get a report. James didn't come up and look at it. We got that fixed. Our booster pump station one night at 4 in the morning called me due to the fact that it lost its signal. And after figuring out who was the one that had worked on that booster station, we found out all it was a battery that had gone out, so it lost its signal coming to. So we got to remember every couple of years we got to change batteries on some of these equipment. We did some work with Kurt, the one that's doing our mapping on the system. We jetted some mains and we camered the mains for him so we would know where certain things are. We have one main that in probably hopefully this spring or summer we're going to have to put in a manhole because it does. There's a T in the line instead of a manhole. And when you come to a section like that, you're supposed to put in a manhole. And that was done whenever Spring Street was built. So that's when we got to put in a manhole. We got our second new blower, so we pulled out the old one that was no good. We've got the new one installed. It got wired last week, Thursday. The technicians were here on Friday to get the settings on it, so we're going to fire it up tomorrow and see how it works. They also did some work on the blower, number one blower, and we've got closer with our, it has to do with how the system works with POs and air pressure and all this stuff. So.
Great. Any questions for George? Thanks, George. All right, moving on. We've got some guests here with us tonight. Mr. Wells and his AP Government and Politics and U.S. History class from Stevensville High School. Mr. Wells.
Thank you very much. I wanted to introduce my students to the audience and the City Council. We have a program called We the People at Stevensville High School. This is the second year that we've been running this program. It is a constitutional competition that's run within the AP government class, and our students are competing for the second time in the state competition, and the purpose of which we have six units of study where the students become mini experts in different topics relative to the Constitution. They have three questions per unit that they prepare responses for, and we're going to do one of those for you tonight if that's okay. And following their 4-minute prepared response, then they have a 6-minute period where they take follow-up questions from the judges. And we've gone through a series of practice hearings at school involving different members of the community, and we'll be making our final preparations in a community hearing on Thursday, January 3rd at 6 p.m. at the choir room. We'd like to invite all of you to come out and see that. We will have all of the students there, all six units, and we use that as an opportunity to do a full dress rehearsal for the state competition, which is in Helena on January 22nd. And I'm going to introduce Matt in just a minute. He's going to tell you a little bit more about how the competition works, but I wanted to introduce the kids. They're actually going to introduce themselves when we do the competition. And then after Matt makes his comments, if it's okay, I'll read off one of the questions that they've prepared a response for. We have 4 minutes to hear their response, and that's done. We'll turn it over to you to ask some questions of them, and the questions that you can ask can relate to any topics relative to some of the comments they've made or the Constitution in general. And this is meant to keep them on their toes a little bit.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Matt, want to explain the competition?
All right. So the competitiveness will be graded on six topics: their understanding of the material, their constitutional application of the material, their reasoning behind it, the supporting evidence, their responsiveness, and their participation.
Okay. Let's have the students introduce themselves.
Hello, my name is Erica Likens, and after high school I plan on studying engineering.
I'm Danny Trangmo, and I also plan on studying engineering after high school.
Hello, my name is Annalise Peprock, and after high school I plan to study math.
Okay, thank you, Rose. When we go to state, there will be a total of three judges, and the judges typically represent retired attorneys and current state and sometimes federal district court judges who retire, and so they have a pretty serious legal background. All of our students will be in rooms by team. Last year there were a total of 8 teams from the state of Montana that competed. We placed 5th. Our hope is to do a little bit better this year. Once the students introduce themselves, then the lead judge will then ask one of the questions, and I'll do that today. As soon as I finish reading the question, the students have 4 minutes to do the response. Anybody want to keep time?
Sure.
Okay. You ready?
Sure.
So as soon as they start the response, we can start the time.
Okay.
So this particular unit's expertise is on how the framers created the Constitution. So unit two, your question is, anti-federalists believed in classical republicanism, the idea that representative government dedicated to the common good can only work in small communities with similar interests. Do you agree or disagree with this statement, and why? And then the two follow-up questions are, how did the Federalists respond to anti-Federalist objections to the proposed Constitution, and why did the anti-Federalists object to the supremacy and necessary and proper clauses of the Constitution? Explain your position on the issue.
In 1816, Thomas Jefferson declared, "The mother principle is that governments are republican only in proportion as they embody the will of their people and execute it." Jefferson expressed the views of classical republicanism, which emphasizes the importance of small, uniform communities that share similar ideas on what is best for the common good. The common good is only best for people when it can accurately follow the will of the people, something that is increasingly difficult when not every American has similar interests. The will of the people is something that can only be executed when there is a will of the people, one singular will that encapsulates all ideals.
The largest problem with classical republicanism on a large scale is just that, the larger scale. When a single government is tasked with representing a large number of people with diverse interests, it loses its ability to be accommodating to each individual and the common good simultaneously. While the philosophy does work in small, uniform communities, it is likely to fail when a large group does not have a common interest. The trial facing our government today is not that there are too many people, but that it is nearly impossible to get everyone on the same page on any issue. As much as Americans would love to dream of the ideal society that achieves the common good for all, it is not only unrealistic, but it would also forfeit a large amount of liberty and individualism if every citizen was expected to agree with the same will of the people as mentioned by Jefferson. It is not bad for individuals to have their own opinions and values, but it is unlikely that all of these individuals will agree on what is best for the common good. While some could argue that the common good doesn't even have to do with the opinions of any individuals, but rather what is proven to be best for them, our rights of self-determination get taken away and our liberty is sacrificed.
Since the creation of our Constitution, the United States has significantly changed from 1790, when our population was about 4 million people, most of whom had similar European backgrounds. These people typically lived in smaller communities with similar backgrounds that allowed for the government outlined in the Constitution to run more efficiently. To put this in perspective, a town the size of Steubenville, so about 2,000 people, would be about the 35th largest city in America in 1790. In comparison, the 2010 census counted a grand total of 309 million Americans, and a town the size of Steubenville is considered very small. This 7,600% increase in the United States population has weakened our political system because as our communities become larger, they also become less uniform and less agreeable. No matter how many people there are in a society, there will always be disagreement to some level. but when communities become too large, citizens often lose sight of what is best for the community as a whole and focus on their own self-interests.
Because larger groups of people have a more difficult time agreeing and looking out for each other, representatives were essential when creating the foundation of the United States government and political system. These representatives would have limited power under the Constitution, of course. Before the formation, senators, governors, or even the president, Americans relied on leaders to pledge their voice as politicians do today. During the Constitutional Convention, men from various states came together representing a large nation to create the foundation on which it would stand. Today, our politicians strive to follow in the Founding Fathers' footsteps. Our country is exponentially larger than in 1787, but we are still able to elect leaders with our best interests at heart. Although it is increasingly difficult to achieve, through representatives and civic virtue, the United States strives towards classical republicanism.
Great. Thank you. Under time.
So pretty good. So that would be their prepared response round. When we go into competition, they don't know which of the three questions will be asked of them. And the judging team that comes around to judge this particular unit will be judging all of the unit, two teams from all of the other high schools. So they'll be pretty comfortable with the types of questions and the type of responses that they'll anticipate. The challenging part then is the follow-up question period, and we can do some of that if you'd like, depending upon how much time you have. And that's an opportunity where the judges then have an option to ask some questions openly of the students to see how they respond. Based upon their preparation, what the judges will be looking for will be the ability for the unit members to answer the question, to sometimes disagree, or to provide some additional response that shows their understanding of the Constitution. So if you'd like to fire a couple away.
Any questions from the council, or I'll even open it up to the public? Michael Sharkey, you have a question?
Well,
you typically do.
Most of what you said went way over my head, but I'm curious, who were the prominent Federalists and who were the prominent anti-Federalists at the time?
One of the most prominent Federalists was Alexander Hamilton. He was suspected to be behind most of the Federalist Papers, which was pretty much just papers that supported the Constitution and explained why it should be ratified.
And the anti-Federalists?
The most important anti-Federalist, as mentioned, was Thomas Jefferson, and he wanted to see a more well-thought-out constitution put forth before it was ratified.
What were some of the things that he was struggling with?
A lot of the anti-Federalists, I believe, struggled with the Bill of Rights just because it was kind of the foundation of the principles within America. And the anti-Federalists wanted to throw that out, and some of the Federalists did not. They wanted to continue with that document.
The anti-Federalists, basically, they wanted stronger state governments. That's what they were worried about in our new constitution.
Great. Any questions from the council? Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Impressive.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, we'll move along to excuse me. Oh, Josh Thomas. I apologize. It's not on the agenda, so it's not there. Dennis, would you come forward and introduce Mr. Thomas?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd love to get the opportunity to come in and present myself to the council. I don't know some of them, so. I'm Dennis Monroe. I'm the building official for the town. I'm the phantom building inspector, I guess. But we recently hired a new building inspector, Josh Thomas. Josh is a local fellow, general contractor with the school here, and he started this last Saturday. Well, Josh, can you give us a little bit about who you are? And, have at it.
My name's Josh. I was raised and grew up here, graduated from school. I know pretty much half the people in this room. I've been a builder slash contractor for 25 years. This is something I've been working toward to get into as my next step. My mom actually was a librarian here for 25, maybe 30 years, I'm not sure. So I've been around the town a lot. I just look forward to taking the next step. Pretty much it.
I look forward to having Josh on board. I'm pretty excited about being here. And being a local and being construction is going to be a big help. So, Any questions for him?
No. Questions from council or the public?
Welcome aboard.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks you guys for being here.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting.
4:30 comes early.
Okay. There's no correspondence tonight, so we'll move on to public comment. Public comment is an opportunity to comment on anything on tonight's agenda or under the jurisdiction of the town of Stevensville, keeping in mind that you can also give comment on items on the agenda throughout the agenda when public comment is called for on that item. If you're making public comment on either under the public comment period or under an agenda item, please make sure you sign the sign-in sheet at the doorway. And then as you give your public comment, please step to the podium, state your name and address for the record. Any public comment tonight? Mr. Anderson.
Hello, Council Mayor. My name is Bill Anderson, a.k.a. Bo Anderson, some people know me in town as, but 3035 Eastside Highway, Stevensville out by Bell Crossing. I'm currently a trustee on the Stevensville Rural Fire District Board. I hold the position of Secretary and Treasurer within that. I was asked to come represent the board tonight, just make a few points on one of your agenda items, which is the interlocal agreement between the town of Stevensville and Stevensville Rural Fire District. I was able to get in early enough to get a document within that basically is a very brief, and I recognize it as a very brief document on the history of how 208 Buck Street, the two bays on the far end, kind of became to be. I know there was probably a whole lot more to it. I was actually involved in the fire department here in Stevensville just prior to that, but moved away to pursue a career in the fire service, and the day I retired, moved back. But so some of that, I mean, a lot of names are familiar that are on the interlocals, but that history there, we've gathered a lot of past interlocals and some other documents that I know I've shared with Brandon and Chief Motley, and we also would offer those up if they need, we need more copies of them, we can get them. But it's really a group of interlocals where some of this stuff is touched. We do understand that through the history of having an interlocal and building those two bays, things have changed. Some attention is paid in areas that maybe we should have paid more attention in some areas, but the interlocal that's laid in front of us right now, the district board feels that it's quite far from where we would want to be as an interlocal. So we've had a couple meetings with Jeff and with with Brandon, to the mayor, to work on some of this. Interlocal was brought to us, and we noticed that it was on the agenda, so we just thought we'd take the opportunity. We believe in the interlocal at all levels. The two departments operationally, in my opinion, work very, very well together seamlessly, both at the command level all the way down to the the entry-level firefighter that's learning how to do the job. They don't see a town firefighter or a rural firefighter. They see a firefighter in Stevensville, and that deserves to be commended by all the work that's been done. We all know that we both have budgets. We both have different rules that we operate under. Ours maybe are at more at the state level, and for the rural side of things, yours at a town level, and that's the way we have to do business. So I guess the idea that the board supports the interlocal, wants to see it move forward. The real sticking point in this interlocal is the two bays on the end, 208 Buck Street, which in our opinions were kind of brought forward and primarily paid for by the rural district. We recognize that we don't have a lease on that building, and we don't have title to it. But we're looking back at history, the intent when the council members and the board members of the past put this all together. I think both sides have kind of drifted away from that. What I think I would like to see, or what the board would like to see, is for us to sit down and bring that back together and look at that.
I certainly don't stand up here and expect to tell you guys how to run your city or town. That's not even, you know, that. It's purely the just our working relationship that we really want to and are open to working on. But I noticed it was a discussion decision, and the board said, why don't we, you know, at least put this out there, put a little bit of the history, and offer up our willingness to come in and sit down and discuss that history. The other item that, as we've discussed with our board, the lease on this, or the rent, or however we want to put it on those bays over there, we also would like to consider that maybe that should be pulled out of the interlocal agreement, and that should be a lease between the town and the rural fire district. I really view, and say I'm going to speak for the board, we really view the interlocal as an operating document. That's how we run calls. That's how we, you know, share costs on equipment and supplies, all of that stuff. And I that really has just kind of hit us lately. So it might be kind of a new idea. I mean, obviously, probably a new idea to Brandon and to Jeff, but it was just brought up. Why don't we think about maybe pulling that part out? It takes a lot of the complication out of the interlocal and really lets it be the document it was meant to be, which is, I believe, is to be an operating document. It's been used for different ways all the way through, and we got a stack of them. I don't believe either side of the table have been the best record keepers in the world, because we have interlocals that were operated under that were never signed by either group years back. We have periods where we just assume that we worked through and maintained those interlocals, and it just came time to look at it and rewrite certain portions of it. But with town's help and Brandon and help from some other guys, we gathered every document we could find, everything that was in our archives, their archives, and at least that with that, they're all together, and we can start to kind of sort that out and make a decision. But I think that's really all we kind of wanted to say, was that the document on the table, the real sticking point is that the bays over there. I'm sure Jeff and Brandon will bring you up to speed, or have brought you up to speed on what. What our concerns are, what their concerns are, and we can move on from there. But we'd be very happy to sit down with, you know, a member of council, a member of the fire department, member, and really sort through this. So with that, if there's any questions for me, I'll take my seat. I don't know if that's possible. So.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Any further public comment? All right. Hearing none, we'll move on to the unfinished business portion of our agenda, standing agenda item, discussion decision regarding the response and recommendation report regarding complaint filed by Town Clerk Audrey Tribency. This is a follow-up from the conversation or special meeting last week, where I've placed this as a standing agenda item so that we can continue to work on this issue over time, certainly as it relates to policy, but I think the more immediate need is to address probably the behavior that's been aggrieved. You asked that the attorney be present so that you could do some questions and answers and that sort of business, and so he's here tonight, Mr. West, and you have the backup documentation in your packet. Ms. Holt.
So where do we go from here? I mean, this is a lot. I mean, there was a few things in here that bothered me, that there was accusations towards a couple people. There was no proof. I just like to, I mean, and I noticed that that you continue to add to this. I thought once it was completed, it was the investigation was done. So I don't know where we move from here on all of this.
Well, I think, you know, the recommendations that I've outlined in my response are under your consideration as to whether you implement those or not. Certainly we'll take steps from the executive branch side to mitigate any harm or misconduct or risk thereof. And I guess in terms of the timeline, the complaint was filed with my office. The investigation was to have a third party evaluate whether there was any merit to the claims, and then I used that investigation to then provide my own recommendations and responses, because the claim was filed with me. It wasn't filed with Ms. Stearns Johnson. I can defer to Brian to see if he has any recommendations as to, you know, outside of that, what next steps you have. Brian?
So, Councilperson Holcomb, my recommendation to Mayor, when he more or less posed the same question to me of what do we do next, was that he should approach the council, because ultimately this council will have control over the policies, personnel policy, for example, and either choosing to implement or change or amend those policies. And that was one of the main findings in Ms. Johnson's report, is that she felt that there was some oversight with the way that the policy deals with bullying, harassment, and hostile work environments. So my direction there was to more or less create an executive summary, bring it to your attention as an agenda item, and then ask the council how you want to proceed further with addressing the supposed structural deficiencies that Ms. Johnson reports finds.
Thank you.
Mr. Michelson.
Hi, I'm Bob Michelson, 223 Turner Street. I had a good talk with Maylin Johnson today. She's the one that did the investigation. I would like to apologize to our clerk, Audrey, for my comment made one night as far as me stating a retaliation issue. I did try to tell her that it takes more than one person to get her removed from her probationary status. It takes a majority of a vote, and it doesn't matter now what I thought. I do apologize if you took that wrong, Audrey. Maylin thought very strongly that I should do that, and I am doing that, and I mean it. Thank you.
How would council like to proceed? No, not necessarily seeking a motion, but some sort of input as to how you anticipate moving on. Mr. Michelson.
Is there going to be a point where the doors are going to come back open for the council, or that it's closed door policy again forever, as long as you're in office?
The lock on the door was a measure to assist to protect the staff from any workplace violence or bullying or harassment. My interviews with the staff following the investigation showed that the staff wished that provision to remain in place. And it has mitigated some of the risk, and so, yes, the lock will remain on the door.
So we're not going anywhere. Because you keep that lock on the door, and you keep your lock on your office, you're locking the council up. You're locking the voices of these people up. Well, how can you start over again when you keep the door locked?
The window stays open.
Of course it does. It's just the idea of locking the council out. You made it pretty fair by design, just little by little, by keeping the council out of here other than meetings. You talk about communication and open dialogue, but we come in here twice a month.
I don't know how you want me to respond. It was a recommendation that we lock the door to protect the staff and the documents in there, in that office. We resolved that there was no reason for anyone other than staff to be in that office, unless they were invited. Meaning, if you step to the window and you need something in the office, it's pretty easy for a staff member to let you in. It is a security measure. We deal with some people on occasion that aren't of the friendliest nature, certainly when it comes time to increase their water bill. That's just an extra step where we want to protect the staff, and we want to make sure that their workplace is free of violence and unnecessary harm.
I'm not talking public, I was talking council members.
The intent isn't necessarily to largely or grossly lock the council out of the office. However, if the council's conduct is such that it threatens the employees, then yes, that is the intent. And that was the perception when the lock was installed, was that council's conduct or individual council members' conduct was perceived to threaten the safety of not only our staff, but the records we had in that office. And so the recommendation was made and decision was brought forward to go ahead and lock that door.
Okay, so I guess everything stays the same. Thank you.
Ms. Holcomb.
It bothers me. I never come here. Well, when I can, I work in Hamilton, but I don't think I've ever threatened anybody. As a council, we've been degraded since day one. I mean, January, the newspaper, the radio station, the news station. It almost happened almost every day. But yet, we're the bullies. I mean, yes, I agree, we have to change the policy and we have to work together and communicate. There's been several times I've sent you emails and you never responded to any of them. And if you responded, it was very harshly response. So yes, I believe we have to move forward. How do we do this? How do we move forward when we feel like we're still being degraded? What gets put in the paper, in the Bitterroot Star? I mean, Council Person Michelson was accused of drinking. During that investigation, then she never even asked me that, if I thought he was drinking before the meeting. In fact, most of my interview with her, most of it wasn't even on the grievance. It was telling me that I better not put Jim Cruz in the spot, or the clerks would quit and there could be a lawsuit. That was my interaction with the investor in the investigation. I mean, how do we move forward from this? I would love to see us move forward, because right now, what's important is this town, what happens in this town, and the people in this town. And since January, we haven't done nothing productive in this town, except bicker between us, things going in the paper, things going here, and we're the bad people. When does that, how did that happen? So how do we move forward? How do we move forward where we're all getting along, or we're not always going to get along, but work in this town for the people? That's what we were, that is why we were voted into the seat, is make the best recommendations that we can, what is best for this town. So how do we move forward? I don't know. I just don't know how we can. I mean, I would love to see us move forward. If we have to do a policy to make sure that this doesn't happen, that's what we do.
Okay. Other council discussion? Mr. Phillips?
No. Mrs. Holcomb is very true about, you know, we're here for the citizens of Stephensville. That's what we're in this office to do, is take care of our constituents. That's first and foremost. My thoughts, after reading all this information, since I'm relatively new to the council, you know, I'm observing quite a bit here, and I've done a search on some of the other communities around, and I'm looking at a possible code of ethics that includes the executive and legislature branch of the town that we adhere to, you know, as individuals and as council members and as executive staff, the staff on, you know, for the city. There are, you know, rules and regulations in the town policy. And that could apply to the council as well as, you know, the mayor and the employees of the town. We could unify that as one, as part of rules or code of ethics, I should say, for the council. Because there are other communities that do have a code of ethics. And like I say, you know, first and foremost, we're here for the community of Stephensville. That's who we serve.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Michelson.
I agree with you, Mr. Phillips, but it doesn't mean we have to get beat to death on a personal.
I'm not aware of what's been going on. You know, I just, what I read here. So, like I say, I'm new to this, so thank you.
I've had a number of people. I've had a sheriff from Ravalli County come to my house to interview me over emails. I could go on and on and on. It doesn't matter. But this last remark a couple days ago, that hit the point home to me. When you accuse somebody of doing something that is untrue, that's wrong. And to be accused of drinking or smelling of alcohol when I have over 32 years of sobriety is BS, and I take that wrong. There's no place in here for that. No place out there. I don't judge anybody on their personal business. I might judge them in here between the public here while we're doing our business, but I will never judge anybody for what they do outside there. So I don't expect anybody to judge me, especially falsely, of drinking and smelling of alcohol at council meetings when I'm sitting next to her and her. And you, Mayor, have you ever smelled alcohol on me?
I have not.
So this is after the thing, and now we get this in our report. And I smell of alcohol. She even messed up when she said, Kathy Cook said I said three different times. It was a joke out in the hallway, and I said, Kathy, she knows I'm a recovering alcoholic. I said, you want to go out for three drinks? She laughed. It was a joke. But I guess jokes don't float around here after meetings. Everything's too serious. If we're going to open up this thing, we are going to have to, it's going to be baby steps. It's not going to happen overnight. We're just going to have to start just a little at a time, and it starts with trust. And I don't care what people say, it can start tonight, like Mim Mac and blah, blah. No, trust is built. Trust isn't given, like a piece of candy. It's not earned. Trust is earned. It's also earned by the council to you, from the staff to us, and us to the staff. That's the main thing, and that's what she said. Maywin, the main thing is communication. MMIA said it. I said it. We all said it. The staff said it. Communication is the number one thing that's not being done here. And it isn't your fault. It isn't theirs. It's all of us. We're all to blame.
everyone was. So if we're going to move forward, in my opinion, we've got to cut the crap and start moving in baby steps. And if it's going to start out a new year, let's try to start it out right. Because this last year, we might have just thrown in the trash. We didn't get much done at all. Thank you.
Ms. Barker.
I would just like to say, in the last part of your report, November 6th comments where I read a letter should not have been included in that report. This was something that was after the fact. Again, I was interviewed by Maylin over the phone, and again, persuaded with the same type of questions that Robin was persuaded with. Asked me about Jim Cruz and the bullying tactics, and her comment was several times was, I'm telling you, if you bring Jim in, this could cause problems within the town. We could have a staff that could quit and a lawsuit. You know, I took that to heart. That was really hard for me. After the interviews were done for the new council position, I felt like we were bullied from a lot of the people in the, and I'm talking bullied and persuaded from the people in the audience that night. I came in probably 2 days later to pay my power bill, and Denise, who blatantly in that letter said that I was not a nice person, come around the counter and shook my hand and said, thank you very much for not bringing Jim Cruz in that night. I tell you what, Jim was my top pick. To me, that was a bullying tactic for several different people, and it took me to heart, too. If we're going to move forward, it's not going to be something that's going to take, like everybody else said, overnight. It's going to be something that's going to have to take step by step. I think we need to start looking with the policy as the first step. Mm-hmm. How the wording is, maybe we need to start with bullying harassing in the agenda. I don't know. But it's not gonna be easy. We all gotta gain trust for each other, and it's gonna take a lot. But I do feel like I was bullied from a lot of the public as well, and none of those people are here tonight. Oh, Mr. Sharkey, please. But again, there's no positive ever.
But I don't think, you guys, that this report, the investigation, the complaint itself isn't about the public bullying or the staff bullying. It's about members of the council and their behavior that they exhibit towards staff and some members of the public towards staff. This isn't an opportunity for the council really to defend themselves against these allegations. The allegations have been substantiated by not only the investigation but by my report. And so I think this is your opportunity to own that and say, okay, we'll correct some deficiencies in policy, but really, policy doesn't correct behavior all the time. You know, we can put in the policy, don't cross the street at 2nd and Main, and people will still cross at 2nd and Main, knowing it violates the policy. Ms. Barker.
I know Audrey had talked to me about stating that she brought this clear back in August. If there was a problem clear back in August, why wasn't this brought forward by you as a mayor? I mean, you oversee those people. It's a question I need to have answered. Why?
I'm hesitant to bring any sort of criticism towards the council because my experience has been that I am chastised for it by the council. You immediately go on the defensive and start to attack me, making it my fault. It's about what the mayor does. It's never about what the council does. I'm hesitant to bring those types of concerns forward, especially short-sightedly. It's just it makes me nervous to do so, especially with the climate the way it has been over the last year. We talk about what's in the paper and that it's not fair that what's in the paper is beating up on the council. Well, folks, I'm not the one making the decisions at the table that the paper publishes. You are. I simply administer your business. And contrary to popular belief, I don't run to the paper. It doesn't do me any favors making this organization or this community look shoddy. Okay? It doesn't help my values. And so I'm not the one running to the paper. The paper stops by on a regular basis. News stations call on a regular basis because they know Stevensville has a story. Ms. Barker.
I just think if we would have known sooner than this, this would never escalated to where we're at right now. And we could have worked on it, you know, on it as an individual basis, identify our problem, define the problem, review our options. I think it should have been something that should have been taken care of way before this ever transpired this far.
Any further remarks from council or any direction? Sounds like Councilmember Phillips has brought forward the suggestion that maybe we adopt one of the recommendations of adopting a code of conduct for the council and elected officials. That's certainly something that we can pull together from, some samples of other communities. We can that's certainly a starting place if that's something the council's willing to undertake. Silence consensus?
I'm good with that.
I do have a note from Missoula. Just like to read it, but that's fine.
Sure, absolutely.
Decorum at meetings. This is Missoula City Council. City Council members, the mayor, city staff, and the public are all required to follow the same basic rules of order and decorum to maintain a productive atmosphere and the integrity of governmental business before council. Comments may indicate a concern for an issue. The behavior or action taken by an individual or group may not include use of loud, threatening or abusive language or acts which disrupt, disturb, or otherwise impede the orderly conduct of the meeting. Such remarks, language, or acts shall, at the discretion of the presiding officer, be ruled out of order. So I thought that was interesting. And like I said, we have rules for the staff that we could incorporate as part of this council. That's an option that we have.
And I think, one of the challenges or the main challenge that I think Brian and I both agree in this claim was that it was a complaint from the staff member involving council members and public. And that's somewhat unorthodox, and it's not something we run into every day. That's a huge challenge for me to, administer a process that involves a body of people where there really isn't any policy governing them outside of the council rules. Having a code of conduct or a code of ethics, something that's more specific other than the default Montana code, would have helped this process go a little bit quicker. Also would have been, it would have given us clear guidelines as to what's allowed and not allowed. If this was a complaint from a staff member aggrieving a department head or another staff member, it would have been very cut and dry. We'd likely not have this conversation now, but it did involve council, and so that was the challenge. Not to public comment yet. Sorry,
Rex.
Not to public comment. How would you like to go? Do you want to take public comment on this issue, or are we okay with moving forward on some sort of code of conduct and continuing this conversation as we go along? Ms. Barker.
I think it's something that we need to work on, like the code of conduct, like Brian had also said, redoing some of the policy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's something that we need to step forward, and that should be our first step with getting that done.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay.
Brian.
Brian?
May I speak or would you like to public comment?
I'm sorry?
May I speak or would you like to wait until public comment?
No, you can speak.
If the council is willing to take some of the recommendations, one of the possible ways forward would be to designate a council member to be a liaison with the mayor to review the report's recommendations, to review perhaps samples, what other communities have successfully done. This is more or less what we did with the security camera, and then to bring those possible recommendations and suggestions back to the council before committee the whole meeting to a workshop on it and talk about what an appropriate change would be able to address the concerns that's been aired by both the branches, with an idea towards ultimately making amendments or revisions to policy. Basically, you have a policy drafting problem before you. It's going to take some time to go through your options on it. So I propose consider identifying somebody from among you to coordinate with the mayor and come back to the council at a notice meeting to discuss what the revisions and recommendations may be.
Ms. Holcomb.
Well, with that, with our attorney, I would recommend that council member Phillips be that person, since he is not mentioned anywhere in this, and he is, what's the word I'm looking for?
He's done some of the homework already, it sounds
right.
Like.
Right, so, I mean,
he's neutral.
Yeah, he's neutral.
Okay.
So I would recommend that council member Phillips would help the mayor with this.
Okay. Does council agree?
Yes.
Okay. You okay with that?
I'm good with that.
All right. Got ball and told.
Glad to help out.
Great. Fantastic. If there's no further discussion from council, I think if it's all right, I'll open it up to public comment and let them chime in on the direction you're taking. Mr. Hanney, step to the podium, please.
My name is Russ Hanney. I'm manager for Mountain Shadow Estate here in Stevensville. I've worked with the town of Stevensville. And that in different occasions, and that being in here at the town of Stevensville, when I come in to talk to anybody, I always greeted at the counter real nice, pleasant, past and present. What I've seen standing here, you've always had an open door policy, which I feel you shouldn't have personally. You got people who have been past mayors who just come walking right straight in through, just like there still are mayor here. And I'm looking at that as a business person. If I was running a business like that, no. You talk, you enter to the individual you need to talk to, you ask, may I have a moment with this individual? Talk your discussion. I don't see why anybody is allowed into that door. It's a private piece of property. If you want to lock that door, it doesn't matter if he's a constable, she's a constable, or they're a constable. There are civilians here. You pay their taxes like everybody else. They go to the door and they ask, can I meet with such and such? It's documented right then and there. You've got witnesses showing that this individual come in. Address the situation. If it feels that you have to have a witness, have one of your secretaries there as a witness. Those articles that we see in the paper where you just let somebody come in and jump all over your desk, that was uncalled for. That should have never been allowed in the first place. That door should have been locked. That person should have been met there in the hallway or brought in with another individual and talked. There wouldn't have been the issue of having to call the police or anybody else in here. And so I feel that, yeah, that door needs to be locked. Needs to be locked to Michelson, needs to be locked to Holcomb, needs to be locked to Stacy, needs to be locked to Mr. Phillips. If they got business with the mayor, fine. Then let them in, talk their business, but have somebody there to back it up. Instead of having, well, I said this. And you're saying, well, no, that's not what you said. But you have somebody there who was with you. You got documentation. In that. But like I said, I've had to work with the city on different things, and I'm working with the city now concerning the piece of property that we have, which the city has rights going through. And that. I've talked to the mayor about it, and we will address the issue come spring. And that. And when I do come, I will introduce myself and ask if I can sit with you. And if we do need to have somebody present and brought up to the agenda, we'll do. But I do believe you do need to lock that door. They just can't any Tom, Dick, or Harry walk through that door. Mayor, past, present, or anything. Councilman, they still got to be identified. Let in. If you need to have electric buzzer put in there, put it in. Let them in. But never have one person. At least have two people when it's interviewing. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Further public comment? All right. Move on to new business then. Discussion decision to approve resolution 440, a resolution adopting ambulance billing policies. Chief Motley, do you want to step forward and introduce the topic?
So, before you get in your packet, is resolution 440 to adopt the billing policies for the Stevensville Fire Department in town of Stevensville, and as far as providing EMS transport service.
Great.
So, the intention of the fire department in providing EMS transport service is to supply the transporting service in the event that Marcus Daily Ambulance or another transporting agency is unavailable to provide that service to the citizens of Stevensville and the Stevensville area, and also those that individuals that may be visiting the Stevensville area. So in order to provide said service without running amok or running against the Marcus Daily Ambulance service, we do have to have a means of billing for service rendered. And we need to have a means of billing for service rendered to the Medicaid and Medicare individuals. So that is what we're proposing to do, is put forward our billing procedure, policies and procedures in light of that. And according to Medicaid and Medicare, if we were not to do any billing at all and provide a 100% free ambulance service, then any Medicaid, Medicare patient or insured would then be able to request that free service and not do a paid service, and therefore we would be running against the service being provided by the hospital and the Zillow Emergency Services and all the other Medicaid and Medicare billing facilities and services out there. So we don't want to run competition against the other people. We don't want to mess up their programs and their services. So we are trying to comply to the Medicaid and Medicare system and put forward a billing process in which that we can do that, so that we're not running against competition of the hospitals and the other services in the area. So this is what is before you. I'm sure you've all had a chance to read through all the papers and all pages. Any questions or what do you want to know?
Nicholson.
Hey Jeff, do you know if Marcus Daly lets their immediate family members or volunteers or firefighters get free services?
I don't know that they do a free. I do know that they do provide discounts and other benefits that way to their employees and to their staff.
Because here it says your exceptions, currently active employees, volunteers of the fire department, and their immediate family members will not be billed.
Yes, it does.
In other words, they get a free ride.
If we transport them, they would get a free ride. They're also the ones providing the service.
Ms. Barker?
Who's going to take care of all your billing and that for this?
Pindler Billing is doing all of our billing. We brought all that documentation and contract and all that stuff before you for your approval previously, and that's all in place. Well, we ask questions, it's all good.
Interestingly enough, I kind of, you know, you look at the billing procedures for EMS billing, and it would be an interesting conversation to have with the utility billing clerk, where they have the different phases of billing and you know, when they're delinquent. maybe an interesting practice for us to practice our on our own in our own billing policy. I think in regard to the exceptions where we do not charge for employees, volunteers of the department, we're almost all volunteer service, and I think the exposure of having to use that is relatively low given that we're a backup service and not the primary service.
I also think that if you read down through there, there is a hardship clause in this as well, that if a citizen does receive a bill and they do have a hardship and they cannot pay it, there is a way that we as the department and the council can waive any of those charges and our fees. So we do have a lot of flexibility in this whole plan. We're really doing a very minimal billing, if you will. I mean, we're billing Medicaid, Medicare, and then auto insurance. That's who we're billing.
Mr. Michelson.
Under phase three, it says that if they don't pay within 30 days, you'll start a collection process.
Yes, it does. And then if we keep going down through there, we can also go all the way to a hardship, and we can claim they can claim a hardship, and we can waive any and all collection on that.
So phase one is typically where that hardship is recognized, meaning we expect that the patient or the customer to communicate with us right off the bat as soon as they receive a bill, letting us know, hey, this is just impossible for me to pay. What arrangements can I make? If they can't work out a payment plan or something like that, which we've authorized in the policy, then that's forwarded on to the fire chief, then to either bring to council or for some consideration as to whether we waive that cost of service. The reason that provision's in there is mostly in part that we don't, part of the service is already being paid for by tax dollars. We don't want to further burden our taxpayers with this service if they're unable to pay for it. We don't want to add another tax, so to speak, or another fee for service.
I mean, again, we're really billing the insurance companies, not the individual.
Ms. Barker?
Under your exceptions, former employees, volunteers who have served for, you don't have anything in there for years.
Correct.
Are you planning on capping that, or what are your intentions for that particular?
I do. I do think that we do need to come to some agreement as to length of service that those retirees or former volunteers will have dedicated to the community in order to receive that benefit. And that's a piece that we just haven't identified yet.
Do you have a recommendation?
I would say probably 5 years.
Is council okay with 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Holcomb?
We always ask this question. Did our attorney look at this?
It has been, I think, before about everybody but you guys and us. Well, it's been before you too at one time as well. Back when we started negotiating and discussing the services as to what we were looking to do.
To answer your question, it did come across my desk. I think it's been a number of months since I last saw a draft of it, but I have seen this billing policy.
Thank you.
How does council like to proceed? Thanks, Chief.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Barker.
I make a motion to approve Resolution 440, a resolution adopting ambulance billing policies for the town of Stevensville.
Ms. Holcomb.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Barker and seconded by Ms. Holcomb to approve Resolution 440, a resolution adopting ambulance billing policies for the town of Stevensville. Council discussion, any further? Public comment, yes ma'am, please step to the podium.
I'm Martha Phillips and I live at 515 Mission. I got a question. If you're going to charge someone from an ambulance, let's say they're really sick and can't get out of the hospital in 30 days, and you send a bill to them, what's going to happen because they cannot find the bill if they're still in the hospital?
Our billing service coordinates that, and oftentimes they're aware of those types of cases where people are in the hospital for extended periods of time, where they can communicate that with the hospital. If they don't communicate in 30 days, we're going to try to get a hold of them somehow. So typically we pull demographic information, like a phone number. We may pull a phone number from them when we do the patient intake, and then we can call them and say, you know, is everything okay? And you know, they're very compassionate on the other end of the phone, and they'll make sure that we make whatever arrangements we need to.
I mean, we gather all that personal information so we can get all of that. So we would have that information and we would be able to follow up and make sure that they were.
Because I know that there's some car accidents or things like that are in hospitals for 3, 4, 5 months.
And the case in our community where we live in a very special place is oftentimes one of our nearly, 40 volunteers typically knows that person somehow, some way. So if the chief gets a phone call saying, hey, this person's delinquent on their ambulance bill and we don't know what to do next, he can often probably figure out, oh, well, they're still in the hospital, so let's just let it ride for a little bit. Yeah. Further public comment? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips?
Aye.
Great, thank you. Next item is discussion decision to approve resolution 441, a resolution adopting ambulance billing rates. Chief.
Okay, so to go along with the other part of this, we need to come up with some sort of a charging schedule or fee. And so what we did is Pillar provided to us their ranges of different fees, different services, different communities are assessing for different levels of care and service. And so what I did is I sat down and I looked at what everybody was billing and charging, and I didn't take the most and I didn't take the least, and I took what I thought felt made most sense for our community and where we were located. And if you, in your packet, if you scrolled it on into the second page, it gives a little clearer breakdown where the ambulance mileage loaded mile is figured at $10 per mile. And that would be from wherever we load to wherever we offload, either Marcus Daly or our community or St. Pat's. And so those mileages can vary, but you know, if you want to kind of take an average of it, say 25 loaded miles or whatever that is, would be a rate there. The transport, there were different fees for non-emergent versus emergent versus whatever. And so I checked the BLS emergent because if we have to transport you, it is an emergency that we're doing it. So that was another $500. And then $30 per half hour of oxygen that we would flow if we were to provide and flow oxygen, that would be a way to recoup that expense. And then also our defibrillation supplies, that would be the electrodes and the patches and the monitoring equipment that we would have to utilize to do that. Those items are not considered disposable. They are disposable, but it's not like a disposable item like a Band-Aid or a gauze or a dressing or something like that would be. Those disposable items we buy through our budgeting process, and we share those expenses with the district. But the bigger ticket, hard dollar, harder items like that, we've built a way that we could recoup some of those funds so we're not taxing on our budgets nearly as hard or as much. So those supplies are added in there at $125, and the routine supplies is another $25. Our ambulance attendees is $150, and the proposal and our thought there is that those individuals that are taking the time out of their day and out of their schedule to do that transport, because it needs to be done, we need to compensate them for that time. And what we figured is a flat $50 per individual. So a three-person crew would be $150. A two-person crew would be $200. So it's $50 per person for that trip. And so that's the time when they pick up till the time they go to the hospital, time to get back and get everything back into service. So the average is going to end up somewhere around $1,000 to $1,100, depending again on mileage and how many people, attendees, and all that thing. So if we're running a code, a CPR in progress or something like that, we're going to have three people on that bus, on that ambulance going in, a driver and two attendees in the back, for sure, performing the necessary skills. So there's your three. If we're transporting somebody with a broken leg or something like that we have to transport, we don't necessarily need to have all three people on that rig. So we could do that with two individuals. And there again, that's some of the offset on the different charges and fees. Again, we are billing Medicaid and Medicare. We need to be somewhere in the Medicaid and Medicare going rate so that we're not, whoa, Marcus Daly, you're at $10,000. If these guys are only at $1,000, you must use them. And then individuals can be denied their Medicaid and Medicare claim because they're not using the most appropriate, least expensive, whatever service available. So, yeah, we'd love to do it for free, but we've got to be in that game so we're not messing up our neighbors, the hospitals and emergency services out in Missoula. So I took kind of an average and I kind of aimed it toward the lower end of the scale because, again, we are providing the service to our constituents that are funding us to go and provide care. So try to be fair all the way around. We also have to be fair back to us, to the council, and that's our budget. So some of these monies, yes, we're going to not be eaten up by hard costs or overheads, but then also be able to help fund the QRU side of the fire department and can also then help us out with kind of budgeting time where we have some more dollars in our general fund in which to utilize. So yes, it does become a revenue source for the town. I don't expect it to be a large, major revenue stream by any means. The number of transports per year, don't know, maybe five, maybe a dozen, but it's really hard to say. But what it does give us is does give us the ability to do it and to do it legally and to be part of the system when the need arises. So that's how I came up with the fees.
Okay. All right, thanks, Chief. Council. Ms. Holcomb?
I move we approve Resolution 441, a resolution adopting ambulance billing rates for the town of Stevensville.
A second. Ms. Barker?
Second motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and second by Ms. Barker to approve Resolution 441, a resolution adopting ambulance billing rates for the town of Stevensville. Council discussion. Public comment. Okay, hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Councilmember Phillips?
Aye.
Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
And Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Next item is 10C, new business discussion decision to approve an interlocal agreement between the town of Stevensville Fire Department and the Stevensville Rural Fire District. This has almost been a process that we've kind of gone through or slowly but surely over probably nearly a year. We've actually operated the last calendar year without renewing an interlocal agreement, and we've kind of just assumed that we've operated under the former agreement. Meetings have been held between the chief and I, the Rural Fire District, myself and the chief, the district board and myself, to kind of pull this together in the best way that suits both organizations. Some of the changes have been highlighted in summary, what the agreement does has been highlighted in your council communication. The Rural Fire Board has not yet had an opportunity to review this, correct? I mean, as a board. Yeah, your meeting's Wednesday night. So the board obviously will have a chance to go through this on Wednesday night. I wanted to bring it forward to you, get your eyes on it. If you chose to approve it tonight, great. If not, we can go and go back and work on it. In addition to the meetings I've held with the chiefs and the boards, we also worked on this with Councilmember Michelson and the attorney Brian West, whose direction was incorporated into this agreement. Chief, any remarks?
Sure. The interlocal agreement is something that has been in place for a number of years, and Bill Angenbeau brought to you and gave you the paperwork kind of outlining the history of the interlocal agreement. The interlocal agreement is an important document, and as Bo mentioned, it does lay out how we operate with one another, each department. And again, our frontline firefighters, they're Steve was a volunteer fireman. They understand that there are two governing bodies, there are two budgeting processes. They don't get wrapped up in that. They want to know that when they get paged, they have an apparatus, they have equipment, they have gear to go out and do the job that they're asked to do. And I believe that we do that quite well. And I believe that the cooperation between the two departments operates and flows very seamlessly and works very, very well. I spend my days in Missoula. Chief Olson spends his days at his business here in local, and he responds to 99% of all the daytime responses, be it in the district or be it in the town. I come home at night, and I respond to any of the nighttime calls that I can muster and make at nighttime. And Chief Olson does the same thing day and night. I tend to do more medical calls in the nighttime than Chief Olson does. That's all fine. This is nothing new. Over the years, over the history of time, when Chief Ellis from the district worked in Missoula, Chief Summers worked here in town, he covered the daytime, and Jane covered the nighttime. And it is a cooperative effort between the two departments to provide service to our community. We are actually serving the same community. I mean, if I live up St. Mary's Road and I drive into town, now I'm in the town district, well, it's a down call. I treat that customer or that patient, same as if I'm driving down 93 and I'm in down the district. It's a give and take. We're working for the same community people. And the interlocal agreement is just the ground rules, a way that we say, this is how we're going to play nice and get along in the sandbox. It's basically what it is. And that's what we need to do in order to provide service to our community and the people that come through our community for whatever reason, if it's to a festival or whatever it is, coming to visit or whatever. So we do need an interlocal agreement. We do need to have these things spelled out so we know what to expect from whom and how that all works so that we do know the rules of engagements. And that's what this is. There's nothing more than this is how we are going to cooperatively provide service to the community. And yes, we've had multiple versions and revisions and changes to it. And this is just another one of those that we need to get figured out where we want to go, what we agree upon, and make it happen. So,
Ms. Holcomb.
I think this is very important that we keep this, but I think we need to table this till the rule board can look at this.
Okay.
I don't think we should pass this until their board has been able to look at it and bring any recommendations they have to. So I would like to table this for the first meeting in January, which I'm not even sure what date that is.
January 10th.
Okay, January 10th. I would like to have this tabled to January 10th meeting.
You phrase that in the form of a motion, please.
Oh, I move that we table this interlocal agreement until our council meeting in January 10th of 2019.
Okay. Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
I'll second the motion.
All right. It's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to table the interlocal agreement until January 10th, 2019's meeting. next year. Council discussion. Ms. Barker.
The one thing I do have concerns is the charge that we are going to charge for the lease of the two apparatus bays. We've never charged before, so why? How much have you charged before?
We've charged for floor space upstairs. We've charged for bay space. We've charged for water. We've charged a lot of charges over the course and history of the different interlocal agreements at differing amounts. This version of the interlocal agreement has got it all boiled down to a square foot price for square footage of floor space. So there's been a lot of charges over the years that have been done away with, rewritten, rechanged, traded out in other ways. But we've always charged and had a lease agreement. And for a number of years, the lease agreement was basically paying for the building that they put up. So, yeah, we've always had some sort of a reciprocity there on the usage and charges.
Ms. Parker?
So a question on the water. I mean, it's, I understand water is expensive, but we actually have probably more rural people attending right now for our fires. Why are we charging so much? Just a question for water.
Charging them water?
Disagreement's not charging.
Why aren't we charging like we used to for the water fee, $1,800 a year?
That was the hydrant fee.
Yeah, but that's rural people using town water. Town people pay for it. Rural people should pay something for the water.
So in previous years, we charged $3,000, and a portion of that was for the use of the water. The other portion of that was to cover repair and maintenance on hydrants. Yes. That's the fee we were discussing. Chief?
Right. So, yes, we have charged for that in the past. We currently are not charging for that right now. We're using their apparatus to haul water for us and us for them, and we just felt that it was an equitable thing amongst the community to not bill for that. And we do ask that they do let us know how much water they're taking and using so that we can track that, so we know that, you know, we don't have a bazillion gallon loss. We used half of that on a fire or whatever that was. And that was just a agreement that we came to a conclusion that, you know, this is fair and equitable. And we felt it to be fair and equitable amongst the different departments in the community. And so that was the point that we agreed upon and then took out and put into the agreement.
I think some of the philosophy behind whether we charge rent and behind whether we charge for water is to some degree that the idea that if we charge for water, that revenue goes back into the water fund. And for the most part, I think the water fund, at least we know that the water fund sustains itself based on the user rates. However, the general fund is where we typically have challenges in meeting revenues. And so by charging rent, then we're putting the revenue into the general fund. Charging water, you're putting that revenue into the water fund, which doesn't necessarily, water fund could use the revenue, but doesn't have to have a revenue. The rate structure can sustain that based on the water that they're taking. We don't know on an annual basis. We've calculated it on a number of different occasions to find out how much water is used by the Rural Fire District on an annual basis, and actually I don't know, as though we could argue that it adds up to the full rate that we've charged.
It just seems awful steep to me.
And keeping in mind, out of that $3,000, a portion of that was for hydrant replacement. Hydrants run how much a piece now?
$2,200
a piece. Further council discussion or input on the agreement? Direction? Is there anything critical you'd like to see addressed tonight so that when this comes back to council on the 10th, we've got that addressed? Chief?
If you guys do, over the next few holiday season, come up with questions or concerns, please call me up. Calling me is the best way to get a hold of me, as staff will attest. I'm not really good at the text thing, but my phone always rings and I always talk on it. My texting device allows me to talk. It's kind of neat.
Stacy.
So what have we charged for the apparatus or for the two bays in the past? Just for the bays?
I don't have an old document.
$5,000 was the original agreement. This all gets so, we've had so many agreements. You almost have to sit down with these agreements and start following it through. When all these agreements and water was charged, the property at the airport wasn't the property it is right now. Currently, your Stevensville Rural Fire District will provide a good chunk of the water. Some of it may come out of town, some of it may come out of rivers, creeks, fill sites. So that was some of the consideration, is if we're paying for water, then we have to have a charge for the water that we provide to the airport and the equipment that we take. You know, so it's one of those where we came to that agreement. We said, no, we've evolved to the point where it's a wash. I know I'm speaking out of turn, yelling in there. So.
No, you're good.
So that's where some of that goes. The initial agreement was we
We gave a building and some land and $40-some thousand in a loan from what we think was the CDBG fund. And then we paid that back at a 6.2% interest. And after that was paid back, that's when we jumped into, I think it was $412 a month, which equals $5,000 a year or something like that. And some of the numbers and some of the documents don't always match up. I mean they're close, but it so to actually say it cost, but it was basically $5,000 a month was what that.
A year.
Pardon, a year. I'm a sorry. Year.
We wouldn't have changed it if it was monthly.
And also to go along with that, at point in time in the past, the district didn't have a meeting room. The district didn't have office space. The district didn't have these types of facilities, and so they were jointly using the upstairs as their area as well, and that was part of that whole rental piece. They now have a meeting room, they now have office space, they now, so they won't need that, so that part has been moved out of this interlocal agreement as well. So those are some of the offsets and the changes into the structure fees of what's going on. And we're trying to narrow it down to clarify what is what and how much and why and how come. So I've gone to a square footage number for floor space being used.
And the 50 cents a square foot was half of the market value for commercial space in town.
Yeah. So. Some of the concern, as I said, we could push either side of this all night long, and it was probably not the time or the place, but if you look at the fee that's right now, when we came to them, we felt we have some, we know we don't have a title, I mentioned, you know, we got on the county records of being an owner in that building, but we did put up almost $100,000 to build it. With the idea, and I believe the intent from past, was to, for the rural fire district to use that and pay rent as we go. We did the purchase of the town's ladder truck. They came to us and asked us, if we move our reserve apparatus out, some stuff so that they could move some apparatus around and have space for the ladder truck, and we did. So really what we went from is two bays, four doors going, you know, front and back. Now we're down to one door front and back, so we have a rescue engine there and a brush rig. So part of that feeling is that we think this is an absorbent fee for that. This is gonna, I mean, this really needs to just be sit down and go through point by point.
Further questions, comments from council?
I'd just like to say a comment that, make a comment, I should say, that I really do appreciate everything y'all do. I mean, just the past couple, what was it, last week and Friday, I watched, I don't know how many fire trucks flying to a fire, and just to hear how they're all working together just to help this fire. I mean, I just want to say I appreciate everything you all do.
Chief, would you address the flying fire trucks? Ours were supposed to drive.
they were speeding.
Since we expanded to the airport.
Very good. Is there any, the motion on the floor is to table this item to the January 10th council meeting, 2019. Is there any public comment? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
It seems like they fly by you, though.
Hey, it happens in the Jetsons. I mean,
all right, next up is the discussion decision to approve grants to others for the Stevensville Museum, Historic St. Mary's Mission, Stevensville Genesis House, Pantry Partners Food Bank, Stevensville Playhouse, and the Clothes Closet. Ms. Van Tassel, still awake?
So every year since 2013, the town has donated $400 to each of the nonprofit organizations in town. This year we did receive applications from six applicants. Normally it's seven, so we did budget for seven, but we got applications for six of them. It's six and we donated two before, so I would recommend that we go ahead and approve it this year as it is in the budget, and they have been approved in prior years.
Okay. Thanks, April. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we approve grants to others for the Stevensville Museum, Historic St. Mary's Mission, Genesis House, Pantry Partners Food Bank, Stevensville Playhouse, and the Clothes Closet.
Is there a second? Mr. Phillips.
I second.
All right. It's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Phillips to approve grants to others for the Stevensville Museum, Historic St. Mary's Mission, Genesis House, Pantry Partners Food Bank, Stevensville Playhouse, and the Clothes Closet. Council discussion. Public comment. Light work. We'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips.
Aye.
Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Great. Next item is discussion decision to consent to the mayor's appointment of Camden Clayton to the Stevensville Fire Department. Chief?
Camden came to us applying for a position within the department. Camden is a registered nurse working here in Stevensville, living in Stevensville, and would like to join the department, be a member of the department, to help provide medical services and firefighting services to the community. I did an interview with Camden, went over his application and all that, and I would highly and strongly encourage you to approve the appointment of Camden to the department. I think it would be a great asset.
Okay. Thanks, Chief. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion that we approve the consent of the appointment of Camden Clayton to Stevensville Fire Department.
Is there a second? Ms. Holcomb?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson and seconded by Ms. Holcomb to consent to the mayor's appointment of Camden Clayton to the Stevensville Fire Department. Council discussion. Ms. Barker?
Is he going to be one of those that's going to be appointed to your ambulance?
Yeah, he would qualify to be an ambulance attendee or to run medical calls as well. Yes, he would be.
Mr. Michelson.
Is he going to go through firefighter one training too, Jeff?
We'll see where that is when we get to that recruiting class as to whom we need to put through or whatever, and then where his participation level is. He just graduated with his RN degree and just took his position over here with Discovery Care. So his spring may be a little congested for firefighter one class this first cycle. Look down through his resume and his attributes. He doesn't think it'd be an issue for him to get through that class. We'll address that while we're looking at a class roster as to who we want to put through there. I'd love to help him go through that and be able to participate there.
Okay. Further questions from the council?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Ms. Holcomb.
So you say, but his resume says Alabama, so he does live in Stevensville. Okay. That'd be a little hard.
But we're flying.
We have flying fire. Further discussion from council? Public comment? Okay, here now. Call for the vote. Ms. Barker?
Aye.
Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
Mr. Phillips?
Aye.
Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
Great, thank you. Next item is discussion decision to consent to the mayor's appointment of Michaela McGoldrick to the Stevensville Fire Department. Chief.
Okay, Michaela. Michaela is a EMTD, basic EMT. She works for Marcus Daly Hospital and their ambulance service. Is frequently in our community during the daytime. And has applied to also join the department to able to run and assist with the Stevensville QRU and the fire department. I'm always looking for daytime responders, so I would again put forward her name as for your consideration to be a member of the department.
So, motion from council. Ms. Holcomb?
I move that we consent to the mayor's appointment of Michaela McGoldrick to the Stevensville Fire Department.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
Second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to consent to the mayor's appointment of Michaela McGoldrick to the Stevensville Fire Department. Council discussion. Questions? public comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Ms. Holcomb.
Aye.
Mr. Michelson.
Aye.
Mr. Phillips.
Aye.
And Ms. Barker.
Aye.
Great, thank you. Item G has been removed from the agenda. It's no longer needed for consideration. We'll move on to item H. Discussion decision to authorize the mayor to reorganize internal job descriptions and address organizational and workload needs. This is a project I'd like to work on over the holiday break. With some of the retirements and changes in shifts in workload with cash receipting and some other efficiencies that we've implemented over the past year, it appears we kind of need to redistribute some job duties. We have kind of an inequity where some employees have a little bit more to do and have a challenge keeping up with that workload. We'd like to shift that elsewhere. The goal is, with this reorganization, if you approve to move forward on it, is that it'd be budget neutral, meaning we'll do it within the means we have with this current fiscal year budget. We would only reorganize to become more efficient and more cost effective. Obviously, spending money doesn't really live into either of those virtues. So, questions? Discussion, motion. Ms. Barker.
So the organization, who are you planning on bringing in a new person for this particular job, or are you?
So it may involve, it depends on kind of how the numbers drive out, it may involve separating the court clerk off of the town clerk's position. The court and the town clerk, we run into some issues where, with compliance especially, I'll delegate or Audrey will assist in some sort of a zoning or compliance issue that's later then brought into city court. That creates a conflict with the court because the person who helped with the issue is now the court clerk and could be called as a witness. There's a lot of challenges with that. Aside from the recent progression or workload that our business at this table has brought upon the clerk is more than what the halftime position can do. You're really operating with a halftime clerk and a halftime court clerk. And we're creating enough energy at this table that a halftime clerk just isn't cutting it. And so I'd like to redistribute some of those duties around and possibly move that court clerk position off. It's a discussion I need to have with the judge to see how she feels about that. The fortunate thing is we have the people in-house now to train for that position. So it's less of a concern than before when Stacy Bartlett resigned. We were kind of in a gap where nobody was around to train Audrey for her court work, and the judge kind of had to do some of that herself. But a good portion of it, unfortunately, fell on Audrey to kind of just learn, because I couldn't train her how to be a court clerk. Didn't have the experience. So. The other consideration we have is that Dennis is retiring, which does open some salary savings in the building department to kind of help with some building code deals that we need to kind of consider, as well as with the departure of Richard Martin, we're kind of left, I'm back to being the zoning administrator, which I don't like to do. Being the mayor, it puts me in a conflicting position. So zoning administration is another consideration where we that position is not filled. And the recent inspector we brought on board, I don't know if that's something we can throw on his plate right now. So I'd like to pull a plan together, bring it back to you folks, and see if it's amicable to you. Ms. Barker?
I think that you need to get with the court clerk, or not the court clerk.
The judge?
Yes, prior to find out what her needs are. I know you said you haven't talked to her yet, so I think that's something that needs to be addressed first.
So the reason I brought this to you tonight is so that I didn't want to waste my time, the judge's time, the clerk's time, anybody's time, if you were going to just flat out say, absolutely not, we're not doing anything, and we're going to leave everything the way it is. If you're okay to hear ideas and solutions, then I'll go ahead and talk with the judge, talk with the clerks, evaluate the budget, work with April to figure out how we can best use the resources we have available to us. So that's my intent, to bring this to you before I formally speak with the judge. Although the judge has raised concerns about the court clerk and town clerk being in the same position. Ms. Barker?
So even though we have part of the building inspector's funds available, I think that should stay in that building, you know, fund, not to be used towards. Is this what you're?
No. I'm not suggesting that we take funds out of the building fund and put them in general fund. I'm suggesting that if there are roles and duties right now, if there's something in the building department that we can allocate to another staff member who's already in house, then that relieves the pressure with the salary savings. Ms. Holcomb?
So the once you have put everything together, it will come back to us.
I just wanted to take advantage of the next, we've got 30 days between this meeting and next meeting. I wanted to take advantage of that time where we don't have to worry about getting a council packet out. We have some downtime in the office where we can kind of workshop these deals and really come into 2019 with some fresh mind and some solutions to kind of fix some of the quirks that are ailing us now. Ms. Holcomb?
And I move that we authorize the mayor to reorganize internal job descriptions to address organizational and workload needs.
Okay, is there a second? Ms. Barker?
Second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Ms. Barker to authorize the mayor to reorganize internal job descriptions addressing organizational and workload needs. Further council discussion? Mr. Michelson?
This mainly has to do with the clerk and the judge, correct?
Correct.
From what you've talked about.
I would say in whole, the administrative office, where we've cash receipting has opened up some time. We're hoping for some efficiency with agenda management software where it'll help with some of the accessory boards and with the council. So there's some changes going on that are going to open up some holes in workload that we'd like to address before we get too far down the road. So we'd hate to waste anyone's time. Further council comment? Public comment. Mr. Motley.
Jeff Motley, 389th Street, Stephenville. I think this is a great opportunity, and this is a part of that first step of communications between the mayor and the council. I mean, he's bringing it forward. Hey, I got this idea. I want to go forward with this. Am I wasting my time, or is this something you guys need? That's communication. That's the piece of the puzzle that I think has been missing in this room for a long period of time now. And so I'm really glad to see you guys are considering it and looking forward. I mean, that's what it's about. We got to have somebody thinking and moving and always trying to move the ball forward and improve. And yeah, it's coming back for final agreement or approval, so we have nothing to lose. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Chief. Further public comment? I didn't notice you were in the corner. I wondered where you were. Excuse me. All right, if there's no further comment or council discussion, we'll call for the vote. Councilmember Phillips.
Aye.
Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Okay, great. Last item on your business agenda tonight is discussion decision to authorize the mayor to engage in discussion and negotiations to purchase 26.06 acres adjacent to the town's well field. Again, this is an item I'm bringing forward to you so that I don't waste mine or the credit union or anyone else's time in looking this over and investigating this. From your council communication, it kind of discusses that we acquired about 7 acres adjacent to the Twin Creeks subdivision for the existing well field. In fact, Ms. Holcomb, you were around during this time, so you can recall some of this. Part of that was, I don't mean to date you, I promise. That was not my intent. I was trying to draw from your expertise, I promise. In that endeavor, there was a infiltration gallery, is that the technical term for it?
The pond.
The pond, we call it the pond. The pond was there to help mitigate some of the water usage from the well field when we transitioned off of the collection facility at Middle Burnt Fork and South Burnt Fork down to the subdivision. In a discussion with our engineers, HDR, we kind of asked the question, well, if the pond, if our water source is reliant on the pond, shouldn't we own it? And their response was yes. Missoula Federal Credit Union had some time ago extended a first right of refusal on the property, so it is listed for sale. If they had a buyer, we'd have a right to purchase it if we so choose. The going price for that piece of property currently, as it's listed, just based on my research on the internet, was $260,600. I've not contacted the Federal Credit Union to see if that's a firm price or if they will be willing to negotiate with us. But nonetheless, this is something that you can fiscally do. There is funding in the water fund with the water storage project funding. Remember, we had $1 million set aside for that project, and this, I think, fits well into that project and going forward, as it allows for expansion of the well field and potential site for expansion of facilities if we need that. From a zoning perspective, if you care, the land across from Logan Lane to the east is all locked into conservation easement, meaning it won't be built on. The credit union, from what I understand, doesn't see much development value in the property. And if they did, you'd see a line much like we see further north with the Creekside subdivision, where we have houses on one side of the road and open space on the other side. That's also a conservation easement. From a kind of aesthetic point, it'd be nice if we could kind of put a buffer between the conservation easement and where the houses are. This plays into that to some degree, although it's not a deciding factor. It's just something that's a benefit, aside from the recreation potential that the property holds. You could open it up to hiking or some other recreation if you so chose. Ms. Parker?
So has this pond been there for a long period of time to where it's not going to...
No.
We buy it and then all of a sudden
that pond was dug,
the water was...
For getting rock and stuff for the subdivision. And in doing so, we were trying to get our water rights. Part of the mitigation in that is that we supply water into that pond and out of that pond for the infiltration gallery. So we haven't got our water rights yet, but that was part of the deal. And we met with HBR a week ago, Brandon and I, and then also, I don't know if you haven't been told yet about the water rights lawyer. We're talking with him, and it was all their ideas and ours that we acquired that property. One for future, because the town's going to grow, you've got to have someplace else to go with more wells, even a reservoir. Plus, we have to have that for mitigation for the water. And it's not a good area for homes in there. So, they have a dent at the town.
So, the pond, we don't have any risk of it drying up because we're putting our water into it. We have ditch water rights out of surface water that we're putting into that pond to keep it full. So it stores the irrigation water, and then in the wintertime, as we're still pumping water out of the ground, this water is seeping in and is sustaining levels in the Bitter River, which is what DNRC wanted to see. They wanted to have us do. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion to authorize the mayor to engage in discussions and negotiations to purchase 26.06 acres adjacent to the town of Wellfield.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Phillips? Okay, it's been Ms. Holcomb and Ms. Barker get a break. It's been moved by Mr. Michelson and seconded by Mr. Phillips to authorize the mayor to engage in discussions and negotiations to purchase 26.06 acres adjacent to the town's Wellfield. Discussion? Questions? Public comment? Okay. Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Phillips.
Aye.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Okay, great. Thank you. As a quick update, George alluded to the water rights attorney. And so HDR, as you know, we did a work order with those folks to kind of work on some water rights and get us preempted into the water storage project. Part of that is aligning our water rights. We're pumping water out of the ground now going on probably 3 or 4 years since 14, 4 years now, that we really don't have any claim to as far as water rights are concerned. And this has been an ongoing project over and over. We've gone through water rights attorneys on and off, and the PCI engineering looked at it. So one of the original attorneys that we had working on this project is now back in practice and has been working with HDR to kind of figure out where we needed to go. He sent me a letter of engagement, which you'll see on your January 10th agenda for approval. And his goal will be to resolve the water rights issues surrounding all of the town's water rights. So he'll focus on the well field, but he's also going to look at the other rights that we have and how we can pull all those together in order to mitigate the water we're pulling out of the well field. In addition to that, just recently, as of this afternoon, I spoke with DNRC and some folks in their planning and grants division, where they made some grant funding available that's somewhat out of cycle that they encouraged us to apply for. It's up to $10,000 to help towards the cost of the water rights work. So I don't know how much it's going to cost us to figure out the water rights. I'm going to contact Mr. Miller to find out exactly kind of ballpark where he thinks that'll cost. But we'll submit an application, I think, to DNRC to kind of recoup some of that cost and stash away as much of that $1 million that we have for the water storage project as we can. So expect that to come forward on your agenda on January 10th. Otherwise, in my executive report, it's been a very busy month and a half here at Town Hall. We've had 8 meetings in 6 weeks. That's 8 council packets. That's 8 sets of minutes. That's 8 agendas in 6 weeks. That's where we kind of talk about the workload of the clerk. We don't want to keep that trend. Just bear that in mind. So we're going to appreciate the break between now and our January 10th meeting so we can refocus and prepare for the new year. The next time we're scheduled to meet will be post 1 year mark of my administration here at the town of Stevensville. And over the past year and even the past weeks, we've seen some significant and even serious low points. It's easy to sit here and probably rehash the negative actions and lapses in judgment, sometimes outright obstruction. I'm not going to do that. Like him or not, President Bill Clinton convinced me otherwise with a statement, "You can do nothing to erase the past, but you can do everything to build the future." That's helped me and my staff accomplish a great deal over the first year of my leadership, and we've earned the opportunity to stand in the sun for a minute. So I'd like to just go over, earlier tonight the remark was made that we haven't really accomplished anything, and I beg to differ. I've got a significant list here of things that we've done, we as an organization. The cash is balanced for the first time in decades. Lighting was installed at the park to improve security. The first ordinance in 2 years was passed to aid in addressing graffiti in public spaces. We acquired 2 Pierce engines and updated the fire department's fleet. The sale of surplus vehicles and equipment last winter generated additional revenue. Our audits are all caught up. Again, we've implemented a firefighter physical program. The pool saw updates to its electric system for safety. The pool saw a facade update, and also ventilation was installed for cleanliness and enjoyment of the users. Participation in park cleanup with high school students was accomplished. Collaboration on the 4th of July, bringing the picnic, skate jam, and a fireworks show all to Lewis and Clark Park on the same day consecutively was also done. A new clerk was hired, bringing a wealth of experience and professionalism to our organization. We launched a Facebook page to help engage our citizens in their local government. A balanced budget was proposed and adopted. The town operates within our means today. We've hired a new police officer who's been introduced tonight. Cash receipting, the new software system has improved efficiency of the office and reduces printing costs. We've noticed that right off the bat. I don't make as many Costco runs for paper. Overtime has been reduced by over 50%. We're not using as much overtime. The use of sick leave has also been reduced throughout the organization. Compliance program is leading to the cleanup of properties and addressing other code issues throughout the town. Volunteerism by our employees has increased in the community as well. Our new building inspector has been hired, and you've met him tonight. The airport received a grant for infrastructure updates that are much needed and hopefully will spur some economic development in that area. Our ambulance service is here to secure and back up the current EMS system. Increased community outreach by the police department in an effort to restore trust in our police force and build relationships with our citizens was a major accomplishment over the past year. Street sweeping was done in some neighborhoods. We painted parking lines on 3rd Street and even installed stop signs for safety on 2nd Street. The website seeing its first updates since 2013. Our website's older than the water we're pumping out of the ground. Agenda management software implementation will be done here in the year. Streetscape maintenance downtown was accomplished, and that was something that was controversial but well appreciated by the public. Live streaming of meetings for citizen engagement is another thing we've done. Bike path trees were replaced while we worked with Northwestern Energy to make sure that they came through on their deal, and they were willing to do so with the transmission line program. The fall cleanup program launched and was completed successfully. Fire department is seeing new SCBAs through grant funding from FEMA, taking pressure off our capital fund, and we'll redistribute that funding elsewhere in our budget to help meet the needs of the town. Our snow removal plan was developed this year. Just recently, our flip the switch event or our contest with the light bulbs was hugely successful. We can see the entries on the wall there. They add some color to the environment. And our email system is being upgraded, in fact, this week, since the one we're on is nearly as old as the website is and no longer serviceable. The staff and I take a great deal of pride in how productive we've been over the past year, and you should as well, each of you. We have a beautiful community because of these efforts, and they ought to be commended. I look forward to another year of positive change and productivity with professional growth within our organization. And happy holidays to you and your families from mine. May God bless you all in the new coming year. That's all I have for my executive report. Council comments. Board reports. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Ms. Holcomb.
I move we adjourn.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker?
Aye.
Okay. I knew what you meant. All those in favor of adjournment.
Aye.
Okay. We'll see you guys next year.
I would still aye.